Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Purdy Insurance. Visit Purdy Insurance on Market Street in Sunbury or visit online at purdyinsurance.com. Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now, from the Sunbury Motor Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Highly entertaining, well-coached. I thought both Pat Chambers and Dave Paulson brilliantly handled their teams on Friday. It was a good game and a great venue. I think Soika, it's the first time I've done a game in there. That is a great venue to be at, and Bucknell's very lucky to have that facility. To me, that's a college basketball facility, yeah. Right,
and
there.
You know,
beautiful.
That was the fifth largest crowd to see a basketball game in Soika, and it's about 11 or 12 year history.
Really?
About 4,300 fans jam packed in. Now, I want to say this about the two coaches. As far as I'm concerned, Dave Paulson won the fashion contest. Hands down. I'm sorry about
yes,
the Penn
did.
State coach,
yes,
Pat
no,
Chambers.
This isn't even close.
He was not up to the task. What we're talking about, it was a throwback game, Steve, and the Nittany Lions came out in those fabulous original colors they had, pink and black. And then,
well, you know what? They're wearing those same jerseys here on Wednesday night.
Aha. Uh-huh. So they get a double dip from the throwbacks. Bucknell, right out of the disco 70s, Dave Paulson in an outstanding, and I might just say outstanding leisure suit. No tie for Dave, and that's the first time in his Bucknell tenure he probably hasn't worn a tie. But where he dug that outfit, I don't know. But, he was definitely. And what we're talking about is the.
I hope those are rental.
Yeah, man, if he had those in the closet all these years. But the last time that Bucknell and Penn State played in Lewisburg was, I believe, 1974. 76. A guy by the name of Jim Valvano was the Bison coach. Mm-hmm. Or as they said on their jerseys that they wore on Friday afternoon, Bisons with an S on the end.
Yes.
Just a great atmosphere. And I think, Steve, my take on it, besides an exciting game, is the fans loved it. I think the players enjoyed the game. And it was a very competitive game. Bucknell tied it up 66 all with a couple minutes remaining. And then, of course, at the end,
yes.
Penn State just was able to pull away superior athleticism, I think, in the end.
Well, and the fact that Penn State's got DJ Newbill.
Yeah, forgot about him.
That's a huge part of this because he's the one NBA, potential NBA guy on the floor, and it showed.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the way he played, took the game over, made some plays. You know, it's difficult. I mean, talent does make a difference in the end. And Newbill is a very talented player. He was just named the Big Ten Player of the Week, as a matter of fact.
Not surprising. Yeah, he was fabulous. And I think that's what made the fans excited about the game, to see a DJ Newbill come into Soika, knowing that he is an NBA player of the future. And he performed admirably. And on the other hand, Bucknell played
real well, too. I'll tell you, Chris Haas missed his first six shots, and then after that, I was glad they said there was only 40 minutes of the game because he started hitting them all over the lot, and I thought, wow, this kid is good.
Yeah, he was from downtown Lewisburg on a couple of those shots.
Oh, my goodness. And guarded, guys in his face, still hitting shots.
Yeah.
I was impressed, man. I was impressed.
So both teams, I think, had some positives coming out of it. Of course, the Bison tonight are up in your old area of, I think they're at Fairfield.
Mm-hmm.
And they have a home game, or away game at 7 p.m.
It's the rich part of the state.
Yeah, though. Exactly.
That's where the money is. I didn't grow up where the money is. I can tell you that.
But you did know where it. You knew where it is, or know where it is.
Yes, we passed by it on the way to where we are, the Burbs.
Yeah. So the Bison
passed by it a couple times.
I think they'll be on Eagle 107 about 6:30 with Doug Bird song with the pregame show. So that'll be fun. And yeah, lots of great
comments, by the way, from people who listened to the game because they had on the Patriot League stream.
Okay.
And they had a chance to listen to Doug. A lot of compliments for the job that Doug did. I think that's really cool because Doug does a great job.
He is with the word intense is one of the adjectives mm-hmm. used to describe because he's really into it. And it was great to finally meet your partner, Dick Girardi, who is one of the great basketball color analysts. Hilarious guy.
He sure is.
Yes.
Oh, my God. Hilarious. Hilarious doesn't even begin to describe Dick.
Yeah. And I was able to hear some of the off-the-air or the stories that occur on air, which are only talked about off-air. And he is the master of clever things, to put it mildly.
Oh, there's no question about that. No question about that. So, and we have 1,000 stories, believe me. We only scratched the surface on that.
Yeah, Friday night was fun after dinner to hear just a few of the very humorous things that occur on air and off air with you and Dick.
Well, I'll give you one of my favorite examples, not the best one, but one of my favorite ones, is the one where Penn State's playing in the BCA Basketball Classic in Milwaukee. And the games took place Sunday, Monday, Tuesday. So Penn State loses the opener to Illinois State. And in the process of losing to Illinois State, that meant they had to play at noon on Monday. And they play Western Carolina. So the game goes in such a way where, because it's noon on a Monday, they announced the attendance at 124. Okay, 124.
Man.
Okay. All right. This is an 18,000-plus arena. We're in the Bradley Center. So the next day, Penn State plays South Carolina State.
Gosh, oh,
not,
boy.
Not a. Oh, yeah.
Not a huge fan
base. Attendance. Right. They announced the attendance. 123. So Dick says, what happened to the other guy?
And he does it in such a deadpan style that, oh man.
Yeah.
Now, the one question I wanted to ask you, how did you and he become the broadcast team that you are? What happened to bring that about?
Well, it's a good question.
I was hoping you'd know the answer.
Dick... In Ed DeChellis' first year, Ed wanted a Philadelphia presence, and he had gone down to do an interview for Daily News Live, talking about the state of Penn State basketball and so forth, and Dick was a part of the interview team. And Dick is one of the preeminent basketball writers in the country. That's why he was put into the U.S. Basketball Writers Association Hall of Fame in April of this year. That's how highly thought of he is in the basketball writer's world. And Ed thought it would be great to have that connection to Philly and have him on the broadcast. Well, he could not do the first year. It was something he, in terms of freeing up his schedule, he couldn't do it. And so it was by the boards. But in Ed's second year, because they'd already planted the seed, he could do it. And that's where it got going. So I had done a game, a football game, the goal line stand game at Indiana that Penn State won. And Jeff Tarman and I drove from Bloomington up to Milwaukee. And so Dick says, hey, you know, he says, first game, the whole thing. He says, maybe we should have a meeting. I said, yeah, okay, sure. So I went to his room. I went to his room to talk. And he says, well, how's this going to work? And I said, Dick, It's just two guys watching basketball. He said, I'll talk, you talk, I'll talk, then you talk again. And that was it. That was the whole meeting. And he's always told people that story, and he always refers to it as he puts it, legendary. And that's the way it's worked the entire time. And Jack and I do the same thing on football. I talk, he talks, I talk, he talks, and nobody really cares who talks or how long anybody talks. Nobody cares about that. I don't care if Dick is really saying something that goes deep into a play, because to me it's important. I don't care if Jack says something that goes deep into a play, because if he's saying something, I consider it to be really important. Conversely, if there's a short point, then I'll just pick up the slack and, you know, and do more.
What?
Either way, it's so that's how we do it. Now, whether other people do it or not, that's their business as how they do it. Most important thing is that we're comfortable in how we do it.
And it sure seems to work both on the football and basketball sides. And I think Dick Girardi brings that kind of, how shall I say, Philly attitude, I guess would be a nice way of saying it.
He says it's rubbed off on me.
I don't think it has yet, but I think it's going in that direction, actually. No, I'm just kidding. No, but he does bring that, a very blunt spoken, call it like it is, a brand of color, and he's not going to sugarcoat anything, that's for sure.
No, he doesn't, but you know what? There's nothing wrong with it, because there's no malice in what he says. In other words, he's not being critical of the kids, or he's not being critical of the coaching staff. He's not criticizing anybody. He's just telling you what's working and what's not working. And Jack's the same way. Jack says nothing critical about players and nothing critical about coaches. He just tells you what's happening on the field, pro and con. I don't think you can ask for your analyst to be any better than that. And look, and I've been really lucky. I always have told people that you want to work with people that make you better. And I ended up with the two best.
No question, they're outstanding.
Now you can debate how much better it's made me.
but
for our next half hour, we'll have more for you here on News Radio 1070 WKOK, brought to you by Purdy Insurance, Market Street in Sunbury. PurdyInsurance.com.
Taking your calls at 800-795-9565. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motor Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Welcome. Great to have you with us today. Show brought to you by Purdy Insurance, Market Street in Sunbury. Go to PurdyInsurance.com. The Purdys have served this valley for years. They've given back to the valley for years. Wonderful, wonderful family. Great business. Purdy Insurance, Market Street in Sunbury. Go to PurdyInsurance.com. I'm in the Sunbury Motors studio. Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, K Routes 1115. Hummel's Wharf. Torrey Michaels working today with Kevin out on the hunt for Bambi, and Bob Buhner's here.
It's scary to think that Kevin has a gun in the woods, you know?
Well, this is one of, I'm not going to sit here and make any political stance, but Kevin is the poster child for gun control. All right, I mean, just to be, let's just be honest about it. I mean, you know, it's...
If not gun control, at least ammunition control.
Yeah, something like that, yeah.
He can have all the guns he wants. Just don't put bullets in him, Kevin.
Well, what bothers me is the safest things in the woods with him hunting are deer.
Yeah.
All right. Okay. So, yeah.
Well, you know, Friday night Kevin came to dinner after much, back and forth for about a week. And I said, no, look, Kevin, I'll take the tab tonight. So after two surf and turf dinners, he started in on the dessert menu.
Oh, goodness.
You know what? We would have never gotten out of there if I didn't cut him off. We'd have been there till midnight. Poor people in the restaurant.
Unbelievable.
Yeah. I mean, he can put
Dick,
it in.
Dick looked at me. He says, how's Jaws doing over there? I said, the perfect eating machine's doing just fine.
Yes.
Thank you.
Yes.
Wow.
And, of course, if he were here today, he would be commiserating about the Steelers' loss yesterday in Pittsburgh. He would not be a happy camper on the air.
No, he would not be, but he has no expectations now. And that's how we feel about him on the show anyway,
exactly.
So everybody has an understanding. We have no expectations. All right, let's. I want to get to Penn State football first,
sure.
Then we'll get to the Steelers and so forth. 4th. There's no need to talk about the Jets-Dolphins game tonight. None. I don't even think they're talking about that in New York.
Apparently, they're still playing the game, but no one cares.
Yeah, they don't, except, well, the Dolphins are in the playoff picture at the moment, so that's where some caring does take place. Penn State football, obviously, they lost the game on Saturday 34-10. They had some opportunities, but the tone was set on that opening kickoff, and whenever a kickoff is run back for a touchdown, you almost feel like that hangs over the game, especially the opening kickoff, hangs over the game the entire time in cushion. It's like missing an extra point. It hangs over the game the entire time. The Penn State defense in the first half gave up, what, two field goals?
That's it.
Two field goals. The Penn State defense gave up two field goals to a very good and efficient offensive football team. In the second half, obviously, they had the opportunities. You know, at the end of the first half, Penn State had a great opportunity, and the Wayans kid knocked that ball away. It was a pretty well-thrown ball. I think it was actually thrown to the right spot to Chris Godwin, but Wayans was able to knock that thing away and then pick it off in the end zone. And Penn State had a dramatic chance there for more points to either make it 13-10 or 13-6. That was huge. Then Penn State had the ball to start the second half and, of course, couldn't get it. And then, obviously, Michigan State scored those back-to-back touchdowns, which were huge. When Penn State cut it to 27-10, the only time I really questioned anything they did on Saturday was not going for 2 points. And I know the book would say that there's still a minute and a half to go plus in the third quarter, and I understand that, except I think you have to know who you're playing. And if you're playing a team that is a no-huddle and you get them three and out and you get the ball back in 40, 45 seconds, all right, I can understand that. But when you're playing a team that can ball control it and reduce the number of possessions in the game, that's why I openly asked on the air whether they should go for two. And my point was backed up by the fact that what did Michigan State do on the ensuing drive? I know they missed a field goal in the ensuing drive. I know that. But they knocked 6 minutes and 10 seconds off the clock in doing it. 6:10. That's why I said maybe they had to think about going for two here to make it a two-possession game now, because you weren't sure how many more possessions you were going to get in the game. And ironically, after that, Penn State only had 3 more possessions in the game.
Yeah, it was when it's 27-9 and you're lining up for the extra point, if you kick it, you're down by 17, you need 3 scores. If you run it in and are successful, you're down by 16. 2 scores and two-point conversions ties it up. And we know that Penn State can do that. They did it with Ohio State. They can come back. They have the defense to keep them in the game. But I think Michigan State got some what we'll call rather short fields to work with late in the game because of a fumble and then a fourth down where they went for it. Steve, the other criticism in the game was the not going for it on 4th and 3 in the fourth quarter. I think we were about on the, 30-40-yard line. And they punted it away. And then late in the game when it's 4th and 20 back at about the inside the 20, that's when they went for it. So,
well, at that point, time and score meant nothing as to what you're trying to do. So, I mean, that's I have no problem with that.
But if you're going to gamble. But,
my point of the 2-point conversion is a minute point. I'm just saying that knowing who you're playing and the style that they play, I think it has to enter into the decision as to when you do something like that. And to make it a 2-score game against a team that limits possessions. That was my deciding factor, not the fact that it was going to make it 2 possessions and let's just go for it and get as many points as possible. I looked at it as how many more times will Penn State get the ball back? And that's what concerned me. If I thought they were going to get the ball back 4 more times in the game, then I'd be fine with it. But in terms of legitimate time, you know, because the last drive is the last one, and you don't have any time left on the clock at that point. So they really only had 2 more legitimate possessions after that. That's why I thought maybe they should go for 2 there, because you're facing a team that gobbles the clock up as they move the football, and that's their style of play. And I think a team that limits possessions, and Michigan State brilliantly does limit the number of possessions in the game, you know, this is not a 15 possession per game team. That's why I would have considered it there. But that's a minute thing.
Well,
that's
no big deal. Steve, isn't there something also that the coaches, by saying we're going for two, are telling the offense we have confidence in you, and if you get that 2 points, then, you know, the team is now thinking, hey, we're only down 2 scores. Now let's really go after them. And, you know, I'm sure there would be some people on the team that would be thinking, hey, we did this with Ohio State. We got down, we came back, we tied it. We're in our house, it's senior day. And I think that would have been a signal from the coaching staff to the players. We believe in you, let's go for it. Because the drive they did to score was a fantastic drive, one of the better drives of the season.
Yeah, it was. There's no question. Now, the other part would be, hey, look, get 2 touchdowns, and with Ficken, you get a field goal. So, I mean, you know, you talk about that. I just kept looking at a team that limits possessions, because we talk about possessions all the time in basketball. You know, it's 4 minutes to go. How many possessions are left? There's probably 8 possessions left in the game. And Dick and I talk about this all the time, because games are possession games. Who has it? How long do they have it? And that's when I looked at the Michigan State-Penn State game. And I'm watching that, and I'm thinking, with the time left on the clock, how many legitimate possessions are left in the game? And that's why I thought about maybe they should go for two there. You know, it's just trying to do some simple math in my head, but I'm a simple guy, so what does it matter? Now, as for the program itself, I have said repeatedly, and this goes back to the preseason in April, this goes back to July, this goes back to August. It's been what I've said during the season. I have not changed my tune one bit. The season, in a lot of ways, you know, a couple close games swung one way or the other, which would have helped in terms of the perception of the season. But I expected struggles. I expected struggles on offense. I really got what I thought might happen as the season went along, because I know how this whole thing was designed in terms of depth and personnel and so forth. Yeah, and I when I went around and made speeches to groups this summer, whether it was in Maryland, Ohio, Sharon, Harrisburg, Sunbury, Selins Grove, Scranton, I mean, I did a dozen of these. Michigan, I did a dozen of these this year. And in each one, I said, look, just be patient. This is going to be the low point and the struggle this year. After this, you'll start to see an ascension as to what's going on. And that is the way it is. You could, you're looking at, a lot of people wanted to criticize the offensive coaches. Okay. But it's really difficult to do your job when two of the key ingredients are crazy glue and duct tape. Right? I mean, that doesn't help when you're trying to craft this thing together. Another part is this. Michigan State, which is a good program right now, to them it was a big deal that they won their 10th game. And it was a big deal that they've now won 10 games in 4 of their last 5 years. That's a big deal. Under Joe Paterno, that happened 27 times here, that they won 10 games or better. And when you look at the reaction that fans have had in recent years to winning 11 and winning the Orange Bowl, winning nine, winning 11 going to the Rose Bowl, winning 11 going to the Capital One Bowl, beating LSU, people felt that Penn State was underachieving in doing that. Now, remember, let's remember the talk and the conversation. You know, they're not recruiting well. They're getting beat by this team and that team and so forth. You know, well, at the end of this, they finally got the Michigan thing done. They started splitting some games with Ohio State. They were consistently beating Wisconsin. And so forth, and they were winning bowl games. Florida State, Texas A&M, Tennessee, LSU, right? All good, solid wins. And now, of course, there's a point where they've won 21 games the last 3 years because they are sanction riddled. And I understand that. They're sanction riddled. And the sanctions are designed to knock you on your backside. That's what they're designed to do. And that's where Penn State happens to be. They were knocked down, and they've been able to somehow stay afloat on all of this, which has been remarkable that they have stayed afloat on all of this. And what the seniors, for example, have done in each of the last 3 years in this senior class this year was that they've allowed them to have potential success down the road because of the foundation that they set and didn't allow the program to sink into a 2-3-4 win funk of oblivion. And that's going to be their everlasting legacy as to what they've done here at Penn State. But I also think that at the same time that there's been a couple schools of thought on my part as I've watched this play out. Penn State has always competed at a high level. Not always, but the vast majority of the time under Joe competed at a high level. They had the one bad dip from 2000 to 2004 where they had four losing seasons in 5 years, and in 3 and 4 they won a total of 7 games. But starting in 2005, the incredible lack of appreciation on the part of some has really bothered me as to how hard it is in college football to win 10 games in a season, and that it's a down year when you have 9-4. It's a down year when you're 11-2. It's a down year when you're 11. I mean, you sit back and go, what the heck is going on here? Everybody else is fighting their guts to get to where you are, and you're there, and there's not enough appreciation for what you're doing and how hard it is. Well, now you look at a program like Michigan State, which is a good program. It's a big deal to them to win 10 games 4 times in 5 years. There's also been the other part, too, is I don't think there's enough of appreciation right now on behalf of some as to how far down the sanctions have knocked the program, how far down it is knocked. You know, you try to throw out the base numbers, and I think there's a vast majority of fans get it, but there's a segment of fans out there that don't get that you are playing with one hand tied behind your back, and they don't understand why you can't overcome certain things at this particular moment. It's not easy to do when you have been placed in this spot. When Donovan Smith got hurt, if that didn't scream to the world that this is right now duct tape and crazy glue, nothing will. I have never heard of a team taking their right tackle, making their left tackle, their center making him the right tackle, and using the backup center. If that doesn't scream to you about what the state is of the lack of depth of personnel in the program, nothing does. Nothing. I mean, they could ill afford to lose any player in this scenario. They lose Diefenbach. They could ill afford to lose a guy like Ben Klein. You know how much Ben Klein was missed this year?
Huge.
You know, when Wartman got hurt, Ben Klein's not the guy out there. When Brandon Bell got hurt, Ben Klein's not the guy out there. That's because now you're going with a true freshman, and then they had to start Gary Wooten because they lost both Kabinda and Bell for this game. You lose Kaiser. Marvelous football player. Knows how to play the game. You replace him with a very talented but true freshman. And that's where, when I look at what they've done as a coaching staff, I look at the great development of Campbell, Haley, Allen, guys that you haven't seen, for example, in Reeder, Torrance Brown. I've watched how they've developed. Really impressive. Right? Then you throw in Koa Farmer, whom you haven't seen yet. Reeder, you haven't seen yet. Kabinda did get a lot better. Kabinda was playing better football in November than he was in October. I see Godwin, he got better. Blacknall really struggled in the preseason. Now, he's playing at a really good level, and he played hurt on Saturday. Tompkins really struggled in the preseason. You should see him now play. Hey, you don't want to take the red shirt off him, but you should see how he plays. Andrew Nelson, how much better he got as the season went along. You know, so I saw improvement across the board in a lot of different areas of this football team, some of players that you've seen and some that you haven't, that show the coaching and teaching ability that's there. Plus, we know that they can recruit. And I love what Bob Shoop dials up defensively. And I think that John Donovan and James Franklin, when you look at the offense, had their hands tied dramatically. And I think if everyone hangs in there and allows them to have a full shot at this thing, this will be the aberration and not the pattern. We'll come back with more in a moment here on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Welcome back. Great to have you with us. As we head to the top of the hour, Dave Bryan, SteelersDepot.com, next half hour to break down the Kevin Hurd Love Fest yesterday in Heinz Field.
I think Kevin headed for the woods early last night.
The Steelers are the only AFC North team to lose to an NFC South team this year. And they've lost to the Saints and Tampa Bay. Not good. But it's also a division where only the Bengals won yesterday. Ravens, Browns, and Steelers all lost. I know everyone's been talking about Johnny Manziel all day on national radio. That's fabulous. If you wish to waste your time on that instead of talking about the issues of the day, that's your business. I don't care. You do your show, I'll do my show. I'd rather just talk about what's really important. Kansas City lost to Denver last night. That helped the Steelers out too. So now the Steelers have two of their final four games against the Bengals. Two of the final four are against the Bengals. So they have head-to-head in their own hands right here. So top of the hour, today's show brought to you by Purdy Insurance, Market Street in Sunbury. Go to purdyinsurance.com. And, of course, I'm in the Sunbury Motors studio, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15, Hummel's Wharf. Kevin Herr is hunting with a gun. A public service announcement of this station and the Ad Council.
We need to give GPS coordinates for his location so people can run.
Everybody just stay in.